Hi, everybody. This is Joel Whitaker, editor of Cane's Beverage News Daily and Cane's Beverage Week. And for today's expert interview, we're talking with Dean Phillips, whose company, Phillips Distilling, has just passed the 1 million case mark for their UV vodka product, which is just a wonderful thing to see happen. And Dean, welcome.
Good to be with you, Joel.
Thanks. Tell us a little bit about Phillips Distilling. You come from a family that's been involved with alcohol practically as long as George Washington, I think.
Yeah, I kid around that I was born with a .02 40-some years ago. But sure. Yeah, we're a fifth-generation family business, one of the very last of the old independents, started by my great-great-grandfather back in 1912, who was a Russian immigrant who settled in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, of all places. And his son, my great-grandfather, was a newspaper boy, and together they opened a small wholesale operation in 1912 that sold La Polina cigars and Wrigley's gum and Coca-Cola products, and expanded their wholesale operation throughout Wisconsin in the late teens, and were approached by the big Canadian distillers at the repeal of Prohibition in 1933, which entered them into the whiskey business. And it only took a matter of months to dispose of other products and focus exclusively on selling spirits. And they moved to Minneapolis in 1934 and set up shop there, and it was a fortuitous moment when a sales rep by the name of Al Dorsch, who was calling on saloons in downtown Minneapolis, saw that men were putting peppermint candies into their poorly aged Indiana whiskey that was coming back in the market after Prohibition. And he turned that idea into a homemade version of a peppermint liqueur, which was soon introduced by Phillips in 1935 as Phillips Peppermint Schnapps, which was America's very first schnapps. And that was the tail that wagged the dog, if you will. And from that time, we stayed in the wholesale business for many years, but also created new products and actually pioneered categories, including schnapps and flavored vodkas in the 1950s. And luxury vodka, Belvedere and Chopin, in the late 1990s. And we sold our wholesale operations back in the late 80s and early 90s to focus on brand building. And here we are today, still trying to pioneer categories and sell one bottle at a time.
So how do you like being a non-wholesaler? Is it more fun, less fun, or?
Well, with many conversations with my father over the years, I can assure you that he certainly had more fun on the supply side than the wholesale side, but we recognize the importance and great value that the wholesale tier brings to this whole industry, and certainly honor that with our own heritage and as we look forward.
Sure, and you're absolutely right. The wholesale tier does bring an awful lot of value. In fact, I don't think it's possible to build a strong brand without having strong wholesalers. So.
No question, and as a supplier that had its origins on the other side of the table as a distributor, few organizations understand that dynamic as well as we, especially those wholesalers that have spent blood, sweat, and tears for generations building brands only to lose them via consolidation or unilateral movements, and we have great respect for those relationships.
Sure. Well, that's excellent. Now, tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, obviously, you must have been born in Minneapolis or a Minneapolis suburb.
I got to give credit to St. Paul, Minnesota, because they'll give me a hard time if I don't. So I was born on the other side of the river here in the Twin Cities.
Very good, excellent. And did you go to University of Minnesota for college? Or?
No, I went out to Brown University in
okay.
Providence, and I always had assumed I would join the family business someday. But as we all know, to assume is to make an ass out of you and me.
Mm-hmm.
So my father, to his credit, required that I work elsewhere for some time before even contemplating joining the family business. So I did so, working for a startup bicycle apparel manufacturing company, and joined our family business in 1993 and worked the overnight shift in the warehouse and on the production line and as a sales rep for some time. And it was the best tough experience I've ever been through.
Good. Well, I suspect you made the right choice in deciding to come back to the alcohol business rather than the bicycle apparel business, which does not sound to me like nearly as much fun.
Not nearly as much fun.
Let's see. Tell us a little bit about UV vodka. It it's done pretty well. It started out with, what, 15,000 cases, and now you've passed a million?
Yeah.
How did you get there?
You know, we're an organization that has tried to zig when others zag, and Belvedere and Chopin and vodkas were a good example of that back in 1995, right before their introduction. The marketplace hadn't seen a vodka priced above $20 a bottle, so that was a pioneering and often scoffed at proposition over 15 years ago. As we were in the process of selling those brands to LVMH, it crossed our minds that maybe that pendulum might swing in the other direction at some point. So UV was really an example of being contrarian in that respect and developing a very affordable and kind of fun, more youthful brand to attract yet a new generation of vodka drinkers. And when it was introduced, it was a modest success, but as a business that has to focus on its innovations, day in, day out, and one bottle at a time, over the last decade, we've been very fortunate to build a very meaningful brand, the most successful brand in our company's history.
That's just terrific. It sounds to me like, from the history of your company, as you've described it, that you almost have a contrarian approach to the business. I mean, you look for areas where there's not a lot of activity or that sort of thing. I'm thinking about the Schnapps area, for instance,
sure.
Back in the early days, and UV today. It almost seems like you have the deliberate thing of not trying to chase the current big thing, but looking for the area where there's more room to play, if you will.
Absolutely. You might say that one man's trash is another's treasure, and that's very much our mantra. We look at categories and look at not what's being done, because we certainly can't compete with dollars or staffing with the giants of the industry. So we use the different approach, which is 100% innovation-based, and it's proven to be a pretty successful formula for generations, and not just in vodka, but as you might recall, we were the first company to introduce a flavored whiskey with Phillips Union back in 2004, and that's a category or a subcategory at least that is generating quite a bit of interest now. And the first spiced whiskey, our brand Revelstoke, which we just reintroduced after a few-year hiatus. And again, I was looking at small opportunities that with some passion and time we can develop into meaningful categories both for our company and our people and our distributors and retailers. And
good.
I like to think that we open the doors sometimes for bigger competitors to run through, but that's a task that we don't mind performing.
Excellent. If you don't mind, take us through the process of getting from that 15,000 cases to a million. I mean, I suppose it can all be summarized down to two words, namely hard work.
Sure.
But,
hard work, of course, but and a whole lot of good luck. What amazes me most is that the brands that become the giants in the industry somehow have some attribute that resonates with consumers, and whether their distribution is limited to a few stores or as broadly as a few thousand stores in the beginning, somehow, some way, consumers find those brands and adopt them and become ambassadors for those that they really that resonate with them. And UV was a perfect example of that. We looked at the vodka category, Joel, and saw that there were countless numbers of brands and a proliferation of new products, but they all, whether it was a $30 bottle or a $5 bottle, they were all clear and looked relatively the same, and thought by adding a little bit of color and not just essence of flavor, but some very significant flavor to the products, that we could really synthesize the liqueur schnapps category, where we were quite strong, with the traditional flavored vodka category. And it was that color, especially for a small brand and a relatively small company, that served as that instant intuition tool, if you will. So when people approached the shelf, they saw a brightly colored blue bottle of vodka, and many couldn't stop but pick it up and take a look, and so on and so on and so on. So that early success here up in the Midwest afforded us the opportunity to approach distributors around the country, and with a lot of hard work, and 10 years later, we're at a million cases, and hopefully the next million won't be as hard.
Good. Well, that's certainly something to hope for, without question. And you said you're in all 50 states now?
Yeah, all 50 states and Canada, and sold now in 19 countries around the world.
Very, very good. How big is your organization? How many people do you have?
We have a team of 30 in sales and marketing in the U.S., a relatively small organization, and it's a platform that we've found very successful over the years in keeping a smaller team of extraordinary people who are as passionate about the brands as I, and wonderful wholesale partnerships with our distributors who ultimately get the job done for these brands. So we're small, smaller than people expect, and we have about 220 people up at our plant in Princeton, Minnesota, and we're a big, happy family.
Good. Now, when you go out to sell these products, like UV Vodka today, for instance, are you doing a lot of hand selling, or are you advertising it, or, how do you market this?
We use some traditional mediums, certainly print advertising, but we only use print when it's backed up by a substantial value-added component. Our most effective brand building, Joel, is done at music festivals and certainly in bars and taverns around the country, and increasingly social media, where we're dedicating far more energy and effort to our Facebook page, for example, than anything else. And that's really become the hub for the brand, and I see it becoming so for most successful brands in this industry, where you can gather all your advocates and friends and really speak to those that do care and create good value-added programming for their benefit. And
sure.
I would imagine we spend quite a deal less than our peer brands in the category, but we're trying to do so more innovatively and with more passion, perhaps, than others can.
Sure. Well, just throwing money at something doesn't necessarily get you results.
We learn that from our government, don't we?
Yes, we do.
It's all about efficiency.
And we're sitting here right outside the seat of government, so we're painfully aware of that.
I can imagine. Nowhere else more so.
Sometimes it's just amazing. The Wall Street Journal today reports that that instead of getting ready of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mac, Fannie Mae, a couple of congressmen are introducing a bill to create three additional companies like Freddie and Fannie, and then to make sure that everybody knows that the government's going to guarantee all their bad mortgages. So, it's just amazing.
Oh, don't I know what you're talking about?
You got to laugh, otherwise you're wrong.
And we look at marketing the same way we do, Joel. Creating brands in which we're not gonna compete well with much larger companies than we. So we have to do things tactically in a more innovative and a different way than typical. One such example of that is on our Facebook page right now. We've enlisted what we call UV agents, who are influencers and bloggers that we've identified from around the country, to whom we afford complete control over our Facebook page for 1 week at a time, and they handle all the postings, their faces, the photo on the photo portion of the Facebook page, and it's attracting, at no additional cost, attracting far more fans than we ever had at a greater rate than we had before. So in a way, we create content and let our fans build the brand for us, and it's been an example of the next generation of marketing taking over how things are done and doing it very successfully.
Very, very good and very clever. I like that, turning your page over to a blogger or somebody for a week at a time and seeing what they can do. And I suppose that actually helps extend the reach a lot, because they'll mention on their own blog that this week I'm...
Exactly. And this is all a networking initiative. When you get, that's what marketing is, essentially, to tap into networks to which you had not been included or invited before. And that's a lot of that has to do with sharing. If you open your doors, it's amazing how quickly that multiplies.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Are you... I just had a thought that completely escaped me. I apologize.
No, I know that.
I know what it was. Do you... your money that you're putting into Facebook, for instance, the social media side, is that money you took from the conventional print advertising, for instance, or is that additional money so that you've kept your print budget flat at, say, $50?
Yeah.
And well, we've added another $10, $20, $30, $40, $50 on top of that.
Yeah, it was a very simple decision. We had been investing significant amounts of money annually in updating our web presence, our main uvvodka.com webpage. And we recognized that the time for flashy, exciting, deep web pages had probably passed because they were so static in nature. So we essentially have a much more simple web page now for UV Vodka, which has basic information about our products, and instead invest those resources into a much more active and engaging Facebook page. And I'm seeing this happen not just in our industry, but across consumer brands. You know, the Facebook page is now becoming the hub, the online hub, for those products. And if anything, we've saved money now by moving to that platform, which is far more effective. And to be able to see the faces of those that are friends of your product is a pretty remarkable enhancement to the marketer's handbook.
Sure is, and I guess that effectively sort of turns your conventional web page more or less into either, you know, a press kit or a distributor's sale kit, the sort of thing that your guys would take out and lay out in front of a distributor.
Exactly.
When you're
the web page is for information, and the Facebook page is for engagement, and Twitter for that matter, exactly the same.
Very good, and I think I get it, too.
Here.
Well, I don't always get these things, so if I get it, it's a good thing. Are you planning any new products?
Oh, we've always got in our laboratory. We're here located in Minneapolis, downtown Minneapolis, right on the Mississippi River, in a 120-year-old livery stable, where we have our main offices and also a product development laboratory, and our wonderful 40-year veteran product development specialist Jim Ani. Has a whiteboard in his laboratory, and every visitor to our office, our friends, family, business associates, distributors, all have the opportunity to write down product ideas on our whiteboard, and Jim Ani makes a sample of everything that goes on there. And we always have a whole book full of potential ideas, and always something new coming, which is, again, the lifeblood of our organization.
Sure.
Sometimes it's just a new flavor concept, or sometimes it's an entirely new proposition.
Mm-hmm. How do you spell Ani?
A-U-N-E.
A-U-N-E.
Good. A-U-N-E, Jim Ani. And we've got a little YouTube site for Phillips Distilling where we have placed his 40th anniversary video. And for you or any subscribers that want to see a really wonderful tribute to an extraordinary industry man, I welcome everybody to visit it. It's Phillips Distilling on YouTube.
Good. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And his father, Ed Ani, worked for Phillips from 1935 to the early 70s. So we've had an Ani at Phillips ever since Prohibition.
I was going to say, that sounds like another family business within your business.
Hey, it's a metaphor for who we are. We are, we're all a family. Not everybody has Phillips as their last name, but everybody's treated as such, and that's our culture, and that's one of which we're very proud.
So should we expect announcements of any new products, perhaps in the UV Vodka line coming up anytime soon?
Yeah, I'll take the wraps off our newest one. UV Cake is coming in about 2 weeks, and there are other brands that have cake flavors forthcoming. So my modest prediction is that there'll be a lot of activity around the cake-flavored vodka concept within just a few weeks.
Good. And
that's our newest.
How about outside vodka?
And how about outside vodka? Well, we're always looking at some. I'll tell you, I used to be a little more willing to share concepts, but as our competitors become much more progressive in their speed to market, I'm becoming a little more cautious.
I think that's a smart idea.
What we're looking at most right now, though, Joel, is identifying indigenous and very unique spirits that we can produce here in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Distilling ourselves, with whether it be fruits or vegetables, and even making whiskey, because there are a few states in the country that have all the core ingredients for making terrific American whiskey than right here in Minnesota. And recognizing the proliferation of craft distilling, that clearly is going to be a growth driver for this industry for, I think, some time to come. And it's an area that we're not going to neglect, I can promise you that.
Good. So let's see. We have talked about how you how you do advertising and how you market UV, especially on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see. What is the most interesting thing you have learned in your career?
philanthropy and helping those less fortunate, we really see what we do as a mechanism by which we can help enrich those and share with those who haven't been as fortunate in their communities or in their lives. And the second lesson has been that you treat everybody with the utmost in respect and kindness and appreciation, because you never know when you're going to be calling on them as a customer, or even the reverse, where they'll be calling on you. And mm-hmm. you know, the number of times I've learned that lesson you know, is pretty remarkable. And I'll share a story. We had Vice President Joe Biden at our home yesterday for a dinner, and I introduced him by letting him know that I was an intern on Capitol Hill in 1989, and all the interns quickly identified which senators were friendly and thoughtful and wouldn't throw them out of the elevator when you happened to be in there together. And Senator David Boren and Senator Joe Biden were the two that were the most friendly to interns. And so I expressed, and I knew it wasn't because he knew I'd be hosting a fundraiser for him 20 years later. And it's just another lesson in any business that if you treat everybody well, you know, it's the best lesson you can ever learn.
Do you think that's a concept that is missing in a lot of companies today?
Yeah, it is. And I as I travel the country and have now for many, many years, you know, most of the people in the business are wonderful people. But you know, as we've lost some civility in politics, we certainly have in business as well. And I lament that fact. And while there's so many joys in technology too, it also has decreased the number of just good old-fashioned human interaction. And as trade shows and industry gatherings have lost some of their magnetism, you know, that really, unfortunately, I think, results in an erosion of kind of the good old days, if you will. But sure. Those can always be recaptured. But
sure.
And I've also found that, you know, there's a suspicion that sometimes the friendliest partners are the smaller partners. And I guess if there's some good news in this industry, is that we've had just as wonderful interactions with some of the larger retailers in the country and larger distributors in the country as we had with the small ones. And that's actually quite gratifying.
That's nice to hear. Mm-hmm.
And you know, any organization or person that gives an upstart or the underdog a chance, you know, to me is a hero. And that means, you know, how we treat our customers and how we treat our suppliers and our own people, and hopefully you know, vice versa.
Sure. Looking out 5 years or 10 years in the future, what do you see for Phillips Distilling and for the industry as a whole?
Well, I think, you know, the best news in the industry is that you know, craft distilling is taking hold, not unlike craft brewing is fundamentally you know, shifting the beer business.
Mm-hmm.
So I see wonderful growth opportunities for you know, smaller distillers and unusual expressions of both whiskeys and liqueurs and other distilled spirits. I think that's a good thing for the industry. Unfortunately, I think consolidation will continue down its historic path, and that will make it harder for smaller products and innovative items to find shelf space. And I think this industry, you know, really has to spend some time to reconcile those, you know, those two extremes, if you will.
Sure.
Nothing is a bigger threat to me, the three-tier system, than a chorus of small suppliers banging the drum that they can't find shelf space. So I really encourage, you know, retailers and distributors to give the small brands a chance, not just from this company, but, you know, from all those who have big dreams and big ideas that are just trying to find some light of day. So I think those issues will become more prominent, and small wineries, I know, are yelling the same thing. And, you know, I think those will certainly become, you know, growing issues over the coming years. But I'm, as I go to stores around the country and see interesting regional products popping up on the shelves next to the old industry standbys, you know, that's really gratifying for me as a consumer and also as a member of this business community.
Sure. Well, that's very good. And, you know, TTB just sent a shot across the bow at some of your bigger competitors about the practice of renting shelf space, otherwise known as slotting fees.
Yeah.
So at least TTB is on that on your side on that issue.
Yeah, and I don't like to see our industry seen in that light, or to see any of our peers and friends punished. But I will say that, you know, a level playing field is both welcomed and appreciated, because as I look at the most successful brands in the last 20 years, at least since I've been a part of this industry, Joel, with very few exceptions, they've come from the smaller suppliers or the entrepreneur. And that's whether it's Sky Vodka or Belvedere or Grey Goose or Jägermeister or Patron. The list is lengthy. But they've all come from the small players. And if you don't level the playing field and allow those doors to be open to innovation, that is not good for this industry. And frankly, that's what led to the demise of the U.S. auto industry, and I hope we learn some lessons from that.
Right. Well, this is terrific. Do you have any, it's hard for me to believe, but you are such a concise interviewee, if you will, that we've actually come to the list, into my list of questions. Do you have anything that we have not talked about that you really wish we had?
No, I'm grateful for your interest in our company and to anybody who might listen to this interview, both our distributors, our competitors, retail partners. There's no one more happy and proud and grateful to be perpetuating this tradition than me. And my father, Eddie Phillips, who unfortunately just passed away last month, was known to many in this industry as the real pioneer. And he always taught me that brevity was one of the great lessons of his business life. So I'm glad to hear that I fulfilled that obligation.
You've done well by your dad, I'll tell you.
Well, thank you.
But there's a lot of material in here. And so I really appreciate your time. If anybody wants to look you up on the web, what would be the web address?
Well, PhillipsDistilling.com.
Mm-hmm.
All of our brands are on Facebook, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always reach me right at our company address. I see every email that comes to all of our websites, too. So got to keep your hand on the pulse.
Boy, it sounds like you're the chief innovation officer there with that.
Everything from janitor to chief innovation officer. I'll take any title they give me.
Very good. Well, Dean, we certainly appreciate your time here, and this should make a really great story. We're looking forward to seeing what in the way of cake comes out of your company pretty soon.
And I forgot to mention our 100th anniversary coming up next year in 2012. So we'll have a few little tricks up our sleeve, including the reintroduction of some of our historic brands from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s. So we'll keep pressing.
Oh, that's terrific. And do you want to talk about the 100th anniversary at all at this point, or do you want to hold that back for later?
Well, sure. I mean, we're making our plans right now, but quite a milestone for any family or any business, frankly, and in any industry. And we are looking to we're actually pouring through our archives right now of old formula approvals and label approvals, and discovering some really extraordinary treasures from the past. And as I look around our shelves and any consumer product shelves, most of the great successes are found their inspiration, if you will, from yesterday. So who knows, we might find a thing or two in our closet that will take us through the next 100 years. So we'll keep posted.
We'll look forward to it, and we'll look forward to announcements as you move forward on both your cake versions and also on the 100th anniversary project. So, Dean, thank you so very much for
your
time.
Thank you so very much, Joel, and best to you, and look forward to our paths crossing soon.
Indeed, and for everybody who's listening, thank you for being on this call, and we appreciate it very much, and have a very great day.
And enjoy in moderation.
Indeed.
Take care, Joel.
Bye-bye, Dean.
Bye-bye.